Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scover, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Welcome back. This is Sarah E. Morin from Community Education Arts. Thanks for joining me at the Roundtable, where today we're tackling whether we should read problematic books. I'm recording this segment the same week HBO Max decided to pull the movie version of Gone with the Wind from its lineup until it could return with historical context. A month or so before this, my partner in crime, Alice, and I selected this book, Gone with the Wind, as a selection for Noblesville Interdisciplinary Creativity Expo. We'll be taking a deep analytical dive into this book and three others, and inviting the community to respond and create art influenced by passages from these classic novels. I first heard of the push to remove Gone with the Wind from HBO Max after reading an article by John Ridley, the screenwriter of 12 Years a Slave. He asked HBO Max to take the film out of its rotation. Quote, "It is a film that glorifies the antebellum South. It is a film that, when it is not ignoring the horrors of slavery, pauses only to perpetuate some of the most painful stereotypes of people of color. The movie had the very best talents in Hollywood at that time working together to sentimentalize a history that never was." End quote. So I've read Gone with the Wind, over 800 pages, but I've never seen the film. I wanted to read the book and form my own opinion before someone else's interpretation influenced my own. Alice tells me that the movie is more racist than the book, but even so, there's plenty to make me uncomfortable in the book itself. The depictions of the Black people that inhabit Scarlett O'Hara's world in her mind fall into three categories: uppity free Blacks, rapists, or most prevalent, slaves, or later former slaves after the war ends, who delight in their servitude. And does Gone with the Wind sentimentalize the South as Ridley claims? Well, that gets complicated. Either way, both the book and the movie have problematic elements. Should we be consuming problematic art, even classics? I'd like to address my own personal philosophy on why I do sometimes read books or consume art of various kinds with problematic elements. By problematic, clearly racism is in the front of everyone's mind so soon after the heinous murder of George Floyd. But problematic for the purposes of this discussion could also mean classism, sexism, ableism, ageism, abuse, religious discrimination, things that we now as a society generally say are unacceptable. Things that privilege one person or group of people while harming another, or just make us morally uncomfortable. First, I would say my criteria for deciding whether or not to read a book may not be yours. If you are a survivor of abuse, only you can decide whether reading a book where a character is abused is okay. Maybe that character's journey helps you through your own. Maybe reading that book could re-traumatize you. Maybe you would choose to read the book if given the proper support and preparation because you know your own limits. My point is, not every book is for every audience. Specifically, that also means children. One of my criteria for deciding whether or not to read a book with problematic issues is, number one, how much of the book focuses on those problematic elements? In a 400-page book, is the objectionable material 8 lines? Is it a major theme? In Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte, for example, there are some pretty racist lines, but the majority of them have nothing to do with a major plot line. That doesn't mean the racist lines are okay, but I'm more likely to acknowledge, yuck, Bronte shouldn't have said that, and continue reading the book than I would be if I had to stomach racism on every page. Number two, problematic elements aside, does the book have merit? Are there great characters? Profound thoughts on another meaningful topic? Beautiful language? Is it pioneering an artistic technique? Is it important because of its role in pop culture or history, like Uncle Tom's Cabin? If we didn't read the book anymore, what would we lose? Do the book's merits outweigh its problems? This is a subjective answer. Number three, what is the book's attitude toward those problematic elements? Is it endorsing racism, the objectification of women, abuse, etc.? Is it making commentary against those issues? I have a big problem with the 1915 film Birth of a Nation, which seriously depicts black men as rapists out to get white women. But then take Mel Brooks's movie Blazing Saddles, in which the black sheriff dupes KKK Klansmen into a trap by saying, "Hey, where are the white women at?" Both movies include the image of black men as rapists. Birth of a Nation endorses a negative image. Blazing Saddles calls it out and takes away its power by making us laugh at it. It satirizes it. Even if a work of art doesn't speak against problematic issues, does it at least allow us space to look at it critically? The novel, Gone with the Wind, for example, has passages that seem to romanticize the Old South, and others that tend to question and criticize it. Our two leads, Scarlett O'Hara and Rhett Butler, repeatedly make commentary that questions the South, both during the war and afterward, as their friends and family get caught up and paralyzed in the birth of Lost Cause mythology. True, both our leads can be patronizing or at times cruel to black people. It was not always clear to me where the author stands, but Margaret Mitchell leaves room and even encourages me to question both the racism and the romantic image of the Old South. Number four, I consider the context of the book. When was the book written? When was it set? If a female character in a Jane Austen spinoff says, "I am deeply interested in politics," and rattles off current issues in Parliament, another character needs to acknowledge that's unusual. The feminist in me may love her, but the historian in me needs some level of accuracy. Setting is an important part of every book. We are all a product, or at least influenced, by the time and place we live in. So it's not okay with me that Scarlett O'Hara owned slave at the beginning of Gone with the Wind, but I do recognize the historic fact that a southern plantation before the Civil War would have been driven by the labor of enslaved persons. Some word this argument as, "It's okay, that's just how it was back then." I would push us to go deeper and have us say that may have been how it was back then. It's okay to recognize that, but it's not okay to think that we should still live in the fallout of those times without pushing for change. Acknowledging, analyzing, or even creating something problematic in the setting, a character's thoughts or actions, is not the same as agreeing with them. We need to own our own past before we can get our heads around our current situation and change it for the better. Sometimes a book with problematic elements can be an agency for change, regardless of authorial intent. If we ourselves as readers do the hard work of saying, "Should society really be like that?" Dystopian novels are built on this premise. We should also, by the way, consider that the values of our own time won't last forever. Sometimes as readers, we are what C.S. Lewis called chronological snobs, and we believe our time period is morally and culturally superior, so will we also be judged. If we were to show our books to people 200 years ago or 200 years in the future, they would cringe at us. Now, by all means, please judge the past, especially when it comes to issue of human rights, but don't ignore that that past exists. Number five, is the problematic issue part of the character? We're all informed by our biases. Just as in real life, the worlds we create in fiction will probably include warty human beings with deep flaws. Reading about perfect characters would indeed be boring. Here I again ask, is the book approving this behavior or attitude? Is the depiction of the issue gratuitous? Or is it there for titillation? Is the author frowning upon that behavior, or at least leaving room for the audience to question it? I repeat, Acknowledging, analyzing, or even creating something problematic in the setting or a character's thoughts or actions is not the same as agreeing with it. An example of a problematic issue being a part of character from my own reading. Just as I've said, not every book is for every audience. Pretty much, if there is a rape scene in a book or a movie, I'm done with it. That said, one of my favorite books, spoilers by the way, is Daughter of the Forest by Juliette Marillier, and it contains a rape scene. It's a major turnoff. It's supposed to be. Much of the second half of the book deals with our main character's healing journey after the assault. Ultimately, the author presents a realistic but hopeful depiction of a survivor who will always be impacted by the trauma, but who does not let it define her. In including rape as a major plot point, Marillier is not saying, hey, rape's okay. She's doing the exact opposite, showing why it's so bad and offering hope for recovery. Number 6, who is harmed by this depiction and what can I do about it? It is essential to constantly be aware of what we're reading. Is the character being depicted badly a member of a traditionally oppressed group? Or are they in the position of power? For example, the gas station was just robbed by an incidental character. Was the character white, black, Asian? If I see this trope all the time, am I looking up what the real stats are so I know black people are overrepresented in the criminal system? Am I saying, hey, a lot of times the criminal in a book is depicted as black and that's an unfair stereotype? Am I accepting things blindly as a reader, or am I aware of them? Calling out stereotypical or harmful depictions of others is a part of responsible reading. Maybe I'm just calling them out to myself, so I'm consciously challenging my own perceptions, but maybe I'm calling it out when I review the book on Goodreads, or write a paper about it, or discuss it with my friends or my book club. Maybe I go out of my way to seek out and spend money on works with healthy depictions of marginalized groups. I definitely give space for people in the group being depicted badly to express their opinion. And I acknowledge that opinion as valid. And that community has every right to say, hey, I don't want you to require my child to read this book in school. Or if you're going to have the school read this, we need to offer proper support so all students understand the problematic issues and ones who might be othered or adversely impacted have emotional and social support. Number 7, does the book expose me to another way of thinking that is important to know? A tame example of this would be, if you are a die-hard Republican who thinks Democrats are ruining the world, read a Democratic book. If you are a Democrat who thinks Republicans are poisoning the country, read a Republican book. Even if you don't agree with what the opposition says. Number 7, does the book expose me to another way of thinking that is important to know? A tamer version of this would be, if you are a diehard Republican who thinks Democrats are ruining the world, read a Democratic book. If you are a Democrat who thinks Republicans are poisoning the country, read a Republican book. Even if you don't agree with what the opposition is saying on a topic, and for some issues you shouldn't, you will at least know what they are truly saying instead of building a straw man argument. You'll be able to form a more intelligent counter to their argument. Or more valuable, you may hear the emotions, needs, wants, and hidden beliefs behind their philosophy. I'm of the school of thought that while sometimes we can overpower opponents physically, socially, legally, you rarely change the true heart of someone without first seeing and addressing the human being behind the issue. It doesn't mean you have to agree with them. You are just trying to understand what's driving them. This type of approach may not be appropriate for all issues and all readers. For example, there are certain books and works of art that you should go into with a swim buddy, meaning someone you trust should be available to talk to you about the issues so you keep your head above water. I would put books like Mein Kampf or things with political extremist leanings in this category. To go back to the book Gone with the Wind, in this book we see the birth of Lost Cause mythology. The author, Margaret Mitchell, was born in the South and wrote the book in the 1930s. She grew up steeped in first-person accounts of the Civil War, and she also did considerable research. In her book, I see both an ability to reflect the white yearning she saw in some members of her community, even if it was for a past that didn't happen the way they remembered, and an ability to stand outside that mentality and criticize it. Gone with the Wind can be a confusing book. It sees its white characters, at least, as fully flawed and human, and can both empathize and ridicule them for their worldview. In our own reading choices, once in a while, we need to look at viewpoints, even uncomfortable viewpoints, other than our own. As today, we ban Confederate flags and remove monuments of Confederate generals from our public spaces. Reading a book like Gone with the Wind may help us understand why someone would want to cling to this image of the Old South. What does it mean to them? There is definitely dysfunctional thinking by some of the characters in Gone with the Wind, but it helps understand how did we get where we are today. Number 8, going back to the notion of swim buddies, sometimes when dealing with books with problematic elements, we need someone to help us analyze it. For example, we might not give To Kill a Mockingbird or Huckleberry Finn to children until they're a little older, but when we do, someone should talk to them about it, a teacher, a guardian, a member of the community depicted, even an astute YouTuber. As adult readers, we need to do this too, seek opinions besides our own about that work, especially members of the community depicted. And by the way, my list of criteria here is generally meant for adults who can pick and choose what we read. We need to be extra careful with children who are more impressionable and sometimes have no choice over what they read. Now, I fully believe that we should delve into difficult subjects with kids, but it must be done very thoughtfully when they're mature enough to handle it and with the right supports in place. At the minimum, we adults have the responsibility to follow up with that child. Hey, what did you think about how they treated that character? Do you think that's right? And help them develop the skills to analyze. So, back to HBO Max pulling the film version of Gone with the Wind. I'm going to wrap up here because I think this news item touches on so many things we've just talked about. A spokesperson from HBO Max says the film will return, but quote, with a discussion of its historical context and a denouncement of those very depictions. It will be represented as it was originally created because to do otherwise would be the same as claiming these prejudices never existed. If we are to create a more just, equitable, and inclusive future, we must first acknowledge and understand our history. End quote. I completely agree. We should not Disneyfy history. Sometimes we must look at it in all its ugliness because to do otherwise would cheapen the experiences of those who lived it. HBO's decision comes after John Ridley, the screenwriter of 12 Years a Slave, wrote an op-ed asking HBO Max to take the film out of rotation. Ridley's right. This has to be addressed. But I do also appreciate that Ridley made it clear that he doesn't want Gone with the Wind to be relegated to a vault. Ridley wrote, quote, "Let me be real clear. I don't believe in censorship. I would just ask, after a respectful amount of time has passed, that the film be reintroduced to the HBO Max platform, along with other films that give a more broad-based and complete picture of what slavery and the Confederacy truly were." End quote. Yes, it's a great solution to seek out a counter perspective whenever we encounter art with problematic elements. It's great to research your history. And I appreciate that Ridley is cautious about the over-application of censorship, which can do as much to silence minority opinions as privilege them. Ridley added that the film, quote, could be paired with conversations about narratives and why it's important to have many voices sharing stories from different perspectives rather than merely reinforcing those of the prevailing culture, end quote. And boom. That's a great finishing piece of this puzzle. Sometimes rather than censor and throw out our classics, we need to use it as a springboard to larger conversations, one that involves lots of voices. My list today is just that, my list. Only you can decide whether you want to consume problematic art. There are certainly books that I choose not to read or recommend because of the harm that they cause, and that harm outweighs their merits. But sometimes when our books and our art have problems, canceling them is not the best option. Sometimes discussion is the first step in a call to change. I'll see you next time at the Roundtable.
This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org.
This activity made possible in part with support from the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.